Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Happy Hump Day, everybody. Good evening, and welcome to the Voice of Indie podcast, episode number 53. Welcome to what's becoming a wonderful Wednesday night routine for us here. So we are happy to have you in the audience, those who are listening. And with me is my co-host, Stephen Jeeves. Welcome, Stephen. How are you doing tonight?
I'm nifty and keen. How are you doing?
I'm keen and nifty. All right.
Wow. All right. So I was looking forward to a couple of weeks from now going and seeing Mark Hearn and Aaliyah Seawright perform in Center, Alabama, but they've decided to postpone that show because they're moving that week. Those of you who were listening to the show last week and heard Mark and Leah talk about they're building their dream house on a bluff overlooking Guntersville Lake and the Tennessee River. So good luck on the move, guys. But when I went in there and looked at the venue where they're supposed to be playing, instead they filled the slot with a band called Hey 19, which is an 11-piece Steely Dan tribute band. And I thought, well, now I got to be there for that. And then the week after that, we're right here in middle Alabama, middle of nowhere. We've got Billy Bob Thornton coming with his band. You know, remember the name of his band, Beam?
The Box Cutters.
The Box Masters.
The Box Masters. Okay.
I like Box Cutters too. The Box Masters, and you know, they're kind of a rock, blues, southern, even some 50s vibe or whatever, and they've got a couple albums out, and they're excellent. And Billy Bob's just a nice guy. They put on a great show. And the last two times they've come to Alabama, first time I kind of accidentally bumped into him out behind the facility and sat and chatted with him for a little while. And then a year later, I parked back by the tour bus, and as I was getting ready to head inside, he stepped out of the tour bus, and he looked up, and he recognized me from having talked the year before. And he wasn't hosing me either. He referred to things we talked about in that conversation. So, of course, I had to get a picture with him. But looking forward to seeing Billy Bob coming up in a couple of weeks, and got a lot of good concerts coming out there for people who can afford to buy the tickets.
Fantastic. Speaking of the Herndons, Mark Herndon and Leah Seawright, my mother, as I stated last week, she wasn't in the audience, though she's a big Alabama fan. She wasn't in the audience because she had some things she needed to take care of with one of my nephews. But she listened to the episode today, and she got a big kick out of Mark and Leah saying hi to her on the air. So that was kind of cool.
All right.
And listen, everybody, if you missed that episode, it's there in our archives as are every other episode. Mark Herndon played drums for the country music supergroup Alabama for 28 years, and he's in the Country Music Hall of Fame. It was a wonderful 90-minute discussion with him and his wife, Leah Seawright. So go over to the archive. You can find the podcast tabs at beamweeks.com, stephengees.com, freshinkgroup.com, and you can find it on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group. And you can find it on Spotify. So, you know, go over there and check it out. It's worth the listen. It really is. Fun time.
So Operation Arctic Sting, a Mac McDowell mission, which is the third book in the Mac McDowell mission series by Robert G. Williscroft, is now out. It's available everywhere. And the release date is today. So we are expecting for the ebooks that have been on sale for 99 cents to jump back to their regular $6.85 price. And checking retailers around the world, we found that mostly that did happen, but as of a couple hours ago, we were still waiting for the Amazon Kindle edition to go back up to the regular $6.85 price. We're assuming that'll happen at some point today, if it hasn't already by now. For those of you who really like a bargain, if it's still listed for 99 cents at Amazon, you might be down to the last couple of minutes of being able to get that that copy of Operation Arctic Sting, a Mac McDowell Mission in ebook form for reading on your Kindle app or Kindle devices. But at any rate, please spread the word. Go check out the video. We've got the video in the newsletter today. The book is out. It's available. Should be priced right everywhere. And we're looking forward to some brisk sales for Operation Arctic Sting. Now, we are waiting for approval from Audible to have the ebook start being distributed too. I mean, the audiobook. Finished the audiobook yesterday and did the retail sample today, and that sucker's ready to go.
Woohoo! Yeah, that was a lot of fun putting that together. And speaking of Robert G. Willis Croft, his Daedalus four novella series, the first book, Daedalus, is the ebook is free in all formats everywhere. So go grab a copy of that and then grab the other three so you have all four in the Daedalus Files series. Some excellent writing, excellent sci-fi and military thriller and all kinds of really cool stuff with that. So Daedalus, that's free right now in all ebook formats. Get over to wherever it is you buy your ebooks and grab a copy. And like I said, grab the other three while you're there.
Now, we were watching with great interest for a couple of weeks there while Karen Ingalls' book, Learning About Autism, was propagating. And we were finding it was showing up in some places and not others. And, you know, so it had some problems that we need to fix because that's pretty much the way it always goes these days. But I do want to be clear that the book we'll be talking about tonight, Learning About Autism, is available everywhere worldwide in all formats, priced correctly with the correct blurb and the right cover and all the things the way they're supposed to be. So as we talk about it tonight and you take an inkling, get over there and go ahead and order yourself a copy.
Yeah. And Hello Chattanooga by David Carroll is available through pre-sale right now or by next week or so. So keep an eye out for that. And Hello Chattanooga is a really cool book. I've got to go through it already because I had to do the indexing on it. And I can tell you just with that work, looking at everything that's in that book, if you're a fan of music, sports, and I'm talking about music going back 100 years, sporting celebrities from 100 years ago and through to the present, and all kinds of entertainment people, actors and whatnot, they're in this book. It's everybody that's played Chattanooga, Tennessee, or stayed in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and what was relevant about their visit to Chattanooga, Tennessee. There are pictures. There are hundreds of pictures in this book. There are personal stories from the author. He works in that television and radio market down there in Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia, in that corner there. And he's interviewed so many of these people. He's got personal history with a lot of them. So the pre-sale will be by next week or so. So keep an eye out for that. We'll keep you up to date on it as it's getting ready to go. Check us out on Twitter at Fresh Ink Group or at Voice of Indy. We will have updates on there, and then tune in next week and we'll let you know for certain when it's going to be out, but or available for pre-sale. But it's one that you're going to want to, if you're a fan of anything,
anything music, history, entertainment.
Yeah, I mean, just all kinds of cool stuff. Check it out. I mean, even sports, sporting events. So.
Now, here's a bonus for you. There are several pictures in there of the Alabama band or members of the Alabama band, including one of a very young, very long-haired Mark Herndon.
Yeah.
Okay, guests, tonight we have two. We have Karen Ingalls, who's the author of the book Learning About Autism, and then we have Carol Tucker, who's the main subject of that book, is going to join us and talk about her experiences as well. So I'll tell you about Karen, and then Beam will tell you about Carol Tucker. Karen Ingalls is the author of five books, of which two are award-winning. She has published nonfiction, a biographical novel, a historical novel, biography, and short stories. She is a retired registered nurse with a master's degree in human development. Her most recent book, Learning About Autism, One Mother's Journey of Discovery and Love, tells the story of Carol Tucker and her adopted son, Justin. Carol is a recognized special education teacher, leader in the state of Florida, developer of curriculum and teaching methods, and co-founder and director of the first charter school for autism in Florida. Justin is a miracle who has astounded doctors and social workers with his achievements. He rose above his cerebral palsy and autism after being given up as hopeless. She is a blogger, public speaker, author of many articles, and advocate for gynecologic cancer awareness and fundraiser for research. In her spare time, she loves to read and play golf. All proceeds from her book sales go to gynecologic cancer research. And that's Karen Ingalls.
A graduate of Rollins College with a BS in elementary education and early childhood education, Carol Tucker holds an MS in special education and behavior management from Western Governors University. After co-founding the Princeton House Charter School in Orlando, Florida, in 1996, she served as a frontline educator and researcher in the field of ASD. She has spoken and presented at related conferences on autism, sat on the Florida Special Education Board appointed by the governor from 1998 to 2001, and assisted with the development of similar charter schools across Florida, focusing on special education. Married for 52 years to David Allen Tucker, Carol Tucker has two biological children, AJ, age 50, Amy, 44, and two adopted children, Justin, 32, and Joshua, 26. And with that, welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Hi there.
So how long have you two known each other?
Only been 3, maybe 4 years.
Yeah, I think it's closer to 3 years.
Yeah.
And how did you meet?
Well, we met in a support group. We both have ovarian cancer, and she sat across from me at this support group, and the speaker was very disorganized, was kind of scattered all over the place, and that was Carol's first time there, and I could see her rolling her eyes and her energy going like, what am I doing here? But I made sure that I was her and from the moment we started talking to one another, I knew this was one very, very special woman.
You're right.
Good for you. That was a lucky meeting, definitely.
It was lucky for me, too.
Yeah. Now, listeners, we're looking for people to call in and talk to our guests today. You can ask questions, make comments, endorse books, try to sell your own book. And also, if you're on Twitter, if you put hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the bottom of a tweet, we will read your tweet on the air. And that can also be a comment, a question, or anything that you want to say. Like we have Verwayne Greenhoe in the audience, and he says, we are here. Come on in. The water's fine.
Yeah. Robert G. Willis-Croft also chimed in. He said for his book, Amazon is back to $6.85.
All right.
So...
All right. Well, you can't get it for 99 cents anymore, but that Operation Arctic Sting is a great book. Get out there and check that out.
Yeah. And if you want to call in with a question or a comment, it's 516-453-9902. 516-453-9902. And you can be part of the show.
So, ladies, you're both in kind of southern Florida area right now. Karen, we've talked to you about where all you've lived before. Carol, are you a native Floridian? Have you been there all your life, or have you moved around?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Orlando, Florida, until I got married, and then I moved to where my husband's from in Georgia, and we stayed there a few years, and I decided I needed to be back in Orlando, and so we've been here almost our whole lives, and I retired in 2012, and we bought a house up in the mountains in North Carolina, beautiful up there, and we stayed there for about 6 or 7 years until I was diagnosed with cancer and decided to come back to be closer to my family, and so we've been here since then. Love this area.
It is beautiful down there.
Yeah.
Karen, what about you? You native to down there?
No, I'm a Southern California girl, born and raised in San Diego. And in my late 20s, we moved to Minnesota. And that's a story in itself.
It must be a shock.
I'll write a book about that. When we retired, we moved down to Florida, and we love it. It's interesting, Carol and her husband were at our house yesterday, and they were looking out at the lake and talking about, do you guys water ski on the lake? I went, oh, heavens, no. Well, they water skied all the time. They say they have never, ever, ever heard of anyone getting bit by an alligator when they're swimming in the middle of the lake. Well, I don't want to be the first statistic, so I'm staying out of water.
Oh, I know. If you're from Florida, you just do it, you know.
Yeah,
I lived in Fort Myers for a couple of years back in the mid-1980s. I guess it was 88 and 89, so I guess it would be the late 80s. And we lived right on the Caloosahatchee River. And there was a beach down the street from us, and we used to go swimming there all the time. And then one night we were out there, and somebody noticed the alligator in the water. But that was the last time I swam in there.
Yeah, don't be surprised if you see an alligator water skiing somewhere in Florida.
Or you can harness two alligators to your feet and use them to water ski. I saw that in a cartoon once.
Well, we used to boat in the St. John's River. My daughter liked to kneeboard, and she'd kneeboard up and down the St. John's River with alligators on either bank, just sitting and watching.
Wow, I couldn't do that.
Yeah,
I was a little nervous myself. Yeah.
I saw a photo yesterday that was like a road with a bike path down the side, and then there were alligators all along the side of the path, and there was a sign there saying bicyclists keep right, and the caption on it was alligators have learned to write. So where is Western Governors University, Carol?
It's an online school out in Utah, and I chose that one because I was so busy with schools and whatever else I was doing. I didn't really feel like I had enough time to take away from my family to go out to school every night. So this way I could do the school and do it virtually without having to leave home. So that was a good decision. It was a great class, a great program that they have out there for special ed and behavior. And so that's how I ended up choosing that one.
So if anybody in our audience is interested in enhancing their education and getting more serious about learning how to deal with special education needs like autism, you would highly mm-hmm. recommend Western Governors University?
Yes, the courses were very good. And I really got a lot out of them.
Where is Rollins College?
Rollins College is in Winter Park, Florida, which is right adjacent to Orlando. And they call it the Ivy League School of the South. And not that I'm an Ivy Leaguer, but it was close to where we lived. And again, I wanted, you know, everything I do, I have to make sure I'm close to my family. You know, I didn't want to drive an hour to school and drive an hour back every day. So that's how that one got chosen.
Hmm. Sounds like a good place. Not some Mickey Mouse outfit.
Well, Mickey Mouse and I are not real good friends, so.
Rollins College is considered like the Ivy League school, and I know Carol was kind of downplaying it, but it has a marvelous reputation, and you have to be pretty smart and dedicated to get into it.
All right.
I bet it's a pretty campus down there, too.
It is. Yeah.
And where did you go to school, Karen? Remind us.
Well, I went to the University of Colorado. And then I went to the University of, St. Mary's College in Winona, Minnesota.
Ah, and I actually heard Minnesota accent in there when you said Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, sure there. Don't you know?
You betcha.
Okay, well, Beam, I think this would be a good time to run the commercial for the book, and then we can start asking a little bit more specific questions.
All righty.
Learning about autism, one mother's journey of discovery and love, a charter school, teaching methods, and resources is the book millions of families must have. Carol Tucker travels the road of autism and cerebral palsy with her adopted son, Justin, now a young man who routinely astounds physicians with his achievements. She is a special education teacher, recognized leader in children's advocacy, and one of the founders of Florida's first charter school for autism, where she served as director. Through photos and stories, best-selling author Karen Ingalls shares Carol's journey, then offers a wealth of resources, teaching methods, school choices, and financial assistance options. With Karen's unique insight, learning about autism shows how one very determined mother and her family can rise above daunting challenges to thrive and find happiness. Learning About Autism is published worldwide in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook editions.
All right.
And on Twitter, Robert Willis Cross says the trick is to be tougher than the Gators.
Yeah.
Or quicker.
Yeah, quicker, definitely.
That's like the old joke. I don't have to outrun the Gator. I just have to outrun you.
Yeah. It reminds me of an old Richard Pryor joke, but I won't go into that. Now, this book, it's an interesting combination here because it's Carol's story, but Karen wrote it. So how did this all come about? And, you know, what was the writing process like?
Well, I'll start, and then Carol can chime. As she and I got to know each other more and more, and she would share all her accomplishments in not only being a mother of two children, but then adopting two children, you know, with special needs. And one time I said, Carol, so what recognition have you received for all that you've done? And she shook her head, and I said, well, you need to write a book. I mean, you have so much that you could share with others. And so we kept talking, and eventually she said, would you write the book for me? Because she says, I can't write. So I interviewed her and interviewed some of her former employees and teachers that she had and parents of children that went to the charter school. And so here we are.
Okay.
How long did it take?
A year. I think we started last maybe August. So
yeah, almost a year.
Year. Mhm.
Wow. So the book covers pretty much your entire family history, Carol, you know, from the early days and your two children before you adopted two more?
I actually could have made a 500-page book, and we were wanting to tone it down a little bit, you know, but I have a wild story, but was really picked up when we first met Justin, right, Karen?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah.
So how did that happen? Yeah. How did you first meet Justin, and what even brought you to a situation where you could meet him?
Well, you know, I think going back, I was I've been a special ed teacher for, I would say, 15 years. And I've always been very, very interested in individuals with special needs and curiosity. I've always been very curious. You know, we had a girl in my class in school when I was in the sixth grade who At the time, they didn't have that diagnosis, you know, but I knew she was slow. And, you know, there wasn't back in those days, you know what they say back in those days, they didn't really have any programs that would had she would have been in. So she was just in our classroom, and I used to walk home with her every day. And she had the hardest time spelling. And, you know, everybody laughed at her and, you know, called her all kinds of names. And so I would take her spelling list every week, and we'd go over it when I walked home with her. And I'd practice with her, you know, and help her out. And, you know, that just kind of started the whole cycle, I think. From there, I did a lot of, I worked with an infant, or maybe I guess it was one or two, and that's when they were doing the patterning. I don't know if you remember that, but they did a lot of patterning with children who had brain injury, and I helped with that, and it just kind of grew from there. You know, I've never been awkward with special people. Like some, you know, a lot of people are very awkward and don't know what to do. So I started teaching in special ed, and then our children, our natural children, were kind of out of the nest. You know, they weren't needing as much anymore. And so my husband and I decided to look into special needs adoption. And it's very interesting. They showed us a book. I went to the Florida Children and Family Services, and they showed me a book one time of all the pictures of all the children who had special needs who were looking for adoption. And I was, like, amazed at, like, how many children are out there with special needs that have no one, you know, that needed to be adopted, or at least a foster care. So we went that way, and that's kind of how we got involved in it.
So did you see Justin in that book?
I did not. One of the requirements, we had to go to a class, you know, to show that we were worthy of being parents, and we had to pass class, and we had to go do the home inspections, you know, the same thing you do anytime you adopt. And we knew we wanted a special needs child, and I was actually looking for, you know, we wanted a child that we could share our life with, and who could share their life with us, and talk with us and do things with us, and, you know, and when they told us about Justin, I told them, oh, goodness, that this does not sound like something that we could handle because of the severity of all of his needs. And I'm like, oh. And they said, oh, well, that's okay. We'll keep looking. And she says, but in the meantime, I sent you a package in the mail with a picture and a bio of Justin. So if you would just send it back.
She did that on purpose.
So, now, having raised two biological children, obviously bringing in a special needs child, that's going to take some changes and some, you know, a different approach. What sort of things did you encounter in bringing this child in?
If you can hold on a minute, go ahead and take the chair. I'm in the middle of something here. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Karen,
did you write about the adoption process, about, you know, the steps they went through and all that, or did you get step past that?
No, that's a very big part of the chapter on Justin. And Carol and Alan looked down the hall, and they saw this little frail child being pushed in a wheelchair, and he had a helmet on, and
he didn't give them any eye contact, and Alan said, can I lift him out? And they did allow that, so they put him down, and because he had right hemiparesis, he couldn't walk, and he just would kind of slither across the floor, and kind of like a snake. And Alan got down on the floor with him, and that really created some bonding. And Justin was wearing a pair of, well, a clothing outfit for an 18-month-old, and he was not quite 4 years old. And
he was very, very tiny.
Very tiny.
He'd never worn shoes. Has he never been outside?
Never been outside at all?
No.
Wow.
No.
The only time he was outside was when he had to go to a doctor's appointment or was sent to the hospital for care of some kind. But otherwise,
right.
No, he was not. And he was in his room had 6 cribs in it with 1 window, which was covered with black paper so that would help promote the child to sleep, the children to sleep. And, I mean, to me, this is cruelty beyond cruelty.
Oh, it is.
And
it's just
yeah.
Unheard of.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, he was sent to a foster home for the terminally ill, and they never thought he would live, you know, more than a year. And here he is at 32 years old, and to me, he is a complete miracle. He's just a delight.
So what exactly were the diagnoses for him? You had being on the autism spectrum,
right,
and cerebral palsy?
At the time that we adopted him, no one had ever even investigated or thought about autism. He was... failure to thrive and cerebral palsy. He had had so many surgeries. I mean, if you look at his belly, it looked like a grenade had hit him. And he had been opened up so many times when he was first born. He was in the hospital for almost a year before they could release him. And they released him to a medical foster home, you know, kind of like an end stage situation. But he surprised them all. I tell you what, this boy has more. I've never seen anyone a hardest fighter as he is. But when we brought him home, and I had taken a sabbatical from teaching for a month or two. And about the first few days, I observed, watched him. There's really no interaction with me or anybody. And one day I suddenly realized as he was banging his head into the floor, my first words out of my mouth to myself, because I was the only one there, I said, oh, my God, he's autistic. And it scared me to death because I never taught an autistic child. And all I had heard was terrible things about children with autism and how difficult, how there was no bonding. And it was just not, I'm like, this is not what we wanted. And when Alan came home from work that day, I told him what I saw. And I said, I don't know if we can keep him. I said, this autism is a terrible thing we're going to have to deal with. I was more worried about that than I was the cerebral palsy. And we both talked about it, and we decided that we had been given this gift from God. You know, God doesn't always give you what you want. And but he gave us Justin, and we both felt like then we needed to keep Justin, and we needed to do the best we could in raising him. And that's where, you know, that's where it all started, right there.
So did the adoption process take a long time, or was it just once you agreed to accept him, it was quick and easy?
Well, you know, when I make up my mind, That's it. I don't usually change it. And we went to see him on a Friday afternoon. They took us. We met him at the Children and Family Services office building, and we met him. And we just, it, you know, I don't know if you've heard people say before that you see something that no one else can see. And mm-hmm. we were immediately enthralled with him. I was like, it was just immediate. It didn't take any time for us to decide. We just saw him. And I told Alan, I said, look at him. He was not really interacting with us, but he was interacting with the environment. And I said, this isn't the same child that I just read about. And so that was Friday, so we asked to bring him to our house on Sunday afternoon, which we did. We went and got him, brought him to our house, and he explored the environment pretty much by pulling himself around the floor. So there was no really interaction with him. But we decided that to bring him home that next Friday, and we did. And that was the end of that. I mean, but and everybody in the meantime is saying, oh, my God, Carol, you don't want to do that. You don't want that. That's not what you want in your life. And I said, well, yes, I do. He's got so much potential. And they're all thinking, my God, where's she coming from? You know, look at this, you know, and look at this child. And he's going to always be a burden to you. And he's never been a burden to us. He's been taking a lot of time and effort, and it's been a hard journey and very frustrating at times, but always very rewarding, always. Just watching him touch the grass when we sat him down in the yard for the first time, you know, watching him in the ocean the first time he ever, Alan took him out there, and watching him laugh because of the waves, and all of these first-time things for him, the exploration that he had in his, you know, when we first got him, it was just amazing to watch him and watch him grow and do well, and hearing people along the way saying, well, no, he's never going to do this, and he's never going to do that. And even the therapist saying, no, he will never walk. No, he will never feed himself. And I'm like, well, I don't believe it. I'm sorry, but I'm stubborn enough to say, I don't believe it, you know.
Well, that's what it takes.
And I guess so, you know. And I was like, so I go to another therapist. I'm like, fine, we're going to find somebody else, somebody that believes. And that's kind of how everything started, like with the school. I'm not going to take no for an answer. You know, everybody, you're going to support me and my beliefs and how I think how I think he should be. And if you don't, then you really don't need to be working with him, you know. Everybody has to be positive. And, you know, and I look back at, watched him grow and become who he is today, and he is obviously handicapped, and he is obviously challenged, but he is such a sweet kid. I call him a kid because he's 32, but he only weighs 70 pounds. He's very tiny. He never really grew much, but
so he interacts now though, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So what was that? Moment? That moment when he first started to interact with you, and you realized you were reaching him. What was that moment like?
That moment, you know, one of the rules that we had in our house, that my first rule when we brought him home for everybody that helped with that him. First of all, when you feed him, you hold him, because he had always been left by himself in a crib, and give him a bottle and walk away. And that's another thing. He was almost four and never eaten food. He'd always only eaten milk with cereal in it. And I said, when you feed him, you hold him. And holding him was like holding a log. He was straight as an arrow, stiff. And the day we realized that he had bonded is when he cuddled, let his, you could feel the tension release in his body. And he loosened up and fell asleep in my husband's arms.
Beautiful.
And we knew at that point that we had made the bond.
Lovely.
Wonderful.
We do have a couple of comments over on Twitter from Verwayne Greenhoe. He's picked up on the alligators. He says, when we lived in Florida, I used to catch 14-inch gators while fishing nearby in Avon Park. I also had a near-death experience when we were swimming in the Atlantic and a 6-foot black-tip shark swam right beside me, catched me on his way up and on his way down. Fun, fun. Boy, Justin would have got a kick out of that. And then
he would have humor in that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Verwayne came back and he said, I worked the ER for 27 years and I have seen many youngsters who defied and overcome the odds to experience a wonderful life. Understanding and adoptive parents are angels from God. I've seen it many times. God bless you. Then he added, I have always maintained that the human touch is one of the strongest drugs on earth. Well said, Verwayne.
Absolutely.
Now, listeners, if you want to call in and talk to Carol or Karen, and you know, you've got a question, a comment, your own autism story, any suggestions, whatever you want to talk about, give us a call at 516-453-9902. We're talking to author Karen Ingalls and educator adoptive parent Carol Tucker. And Beam, you want to roll another commercial and give the ladies a half a minute break?
Sure.
This is a chance to choose.
Now, from popular Christian romance author Jeannie Sharp, A Chance to Choose. The life of a baker had been his dream since college, but a deep void surfaces every morning when Ben looks at himself in the mirror. Why at 29 has he not been able to find the woman of his dreams? His boss and owner of Camden Bake Shop, Chloe, keeps pestering him about dating. Then, an old fling mails him a plane ticket to London. Except turmoil draws him back home to Virginia. Does Ben get the chance to go to London? With three women suddenly interested, will Ben ever be able to choose? A Chance to Choose is book three of the Second Chances series by Christian romance and children's book author Jeannie Sharp. A Chance to Choose is available worldwide in jacketed hardcover, paperback, and all ebook formats from Kindle to Kobo to Nook and Google Play. A Chance to Choose is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Grab your copy of A Chance to Choose today.
All right, listeners, we are talking with Karen Ingalls and Carol Tucker. And if you have any questions or comments, the phone lines are open, 516-453-9902. 516-453-9902. Okay. How about we move on to talking
about
a little bit about Joshua?
Yeah, I'm curious about Joshua, too.
Turn the spotlight on Joshua.
Well, Joshua, you know, I think I mentioned that when we first thought about adopting, we wanted the child who could talk to us and interact with us and we could do fun things with. And, of course, God had been other plans at the time and decided to give us Justin, who required a lot more work than I was expecting. But in we adopted Justin in 1993, and in 1998, I got a phone call from Department of Children and Family saying, we have a child for you. And this is a little two-year-old, and he has Down syndrome. And I'm like, oh, my God. So you know, I couldn't help myself. I couldn't. And so Alan and I went to meet him. He was quite the cutest little guy, and another little tiny one. And you know, he was. You know what they say. I did what I was supposed to. We followed God's direction, and in return, this was our gift. You know how it goes. If you do this for me, then I'll do this for you. And so he gave us Joshua, and he was quite the little spitfire, but very he's smart and cute and communicative, and so we have enjoyed Joshua on a whole different level. And then you know, the two of them together, Joshua and Justin, really loved each other. You know, they loved each other, and so that was a whole different story.
There is a wonderful picture in the book of the two of them hugging. That's one of my favorite pictures in the book.
Yes. Well, that was Joshua brought out. Joshua would force Justin to hug him. You know, you get over here and you hug me. So it was a real nice, it was a nice addition to our family.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I believe that, you know, like you said, Joshua would force Justin to hug him. I believe that that's situations where they're brought together because they need each other. And you talk about God working behind the scenes there. I believe in that. And I believe that, that he sets things up, and, like you said, you didn't get exactly what you thought you were going to get the first time, you know, but Justin needed you. And I'm guessing you probably needed Justin too, you know, early on.
Yes. He sure did keep us busy. That's for sure. We had a drawer in the kitchen. The drawer, why don't you go look in the drawer? And in the drawer was a drawer full of takeout menus because we couldn't go anywhere with Justin. His behavior was such that we didn't like having silverware thrown across the restaurant, you know. And so we would say, okay, what are we having for dinner tonight? We go to the drawer and find something.
Was it a challenge also to find the resources and help and information that you needed in the community for working with Joshua too?
You know, the Down syndrome community was more advanced in having having people, knowledgeable people working with them. They had a great at the time. And before that, they had a great organization, and had done so much research and working with children with Down syndrome. And on just the opposite end, at autism back in the early 90s was not a very common subject to talk about. And so there were no real support groups at the time, and there was nothing there to lean on. There's no support for parents, and doctors pretty much didn't know much about it, and they really didn't care to have. We went through probably five pediatricians till we found a pediatrician who would work with Justin or treat Justin, because they didn't want to deal with it, and they didn't know how to deal with it, and I think that's one, if nothing else, I think that's one of the things that our mission was, even though I didn't realize it at the time, to develop these connections and develop finding people like us who needed more information and finding the right therapists and finding the right doctors. And you can't find just anybody. You've got to go in and say, you know, have you ever worked with an autistic child? and or are you willing to work with an autistic child? And otherwise, you're not getting anywhere. And you know, the difference between the autism and Down syndrome is Down syndrome children are always mostly so outgoing and friendly, and you know, people enjoy working with them. They love to hug, and you know, they're very sweet. Where on the opposite side, most children with autism are not that way. They are very difficult to work with. They're not outgoing. They're very self-interested, and they make, you know, working with them very, very difficult. I've had therapists being, you know, slapped in the face, you know, by Justin. I've had therapists had their arm bitten by Justin. And that doesn't happen with Down syndrome. So it was, the challenge was to find the people who were willing to work with these children. You know, so that, I feel like it kind of laid on my lap there. So that's what we did.
Now, Karen, okay. You talk about this process a lot in the book. What else can people expect to find in the book? I mean, ranging from Carol's story to different lists of resources and things like that in the community. What all are you offering in this book?
Well, certainly I talk about what are the possible causes, and they don't really know. And there's a lot of controversy out there that it's due to immunizations or diet or environmental issues. And none of that has been really proven scientifically. So I bring that information, and we are finding through MRIs that those with autism have differences in a few areas of the brain from the general population. I also, thanks to many suggestions and research, found resources for parents so they can go and find help for themselves to have some education, and also listing of schools and support groups and physicians and books. There are many, many books out there, and every one of them is valuable. It's just each family's experience is unique, and I think everyone can learn from each of those. So it's not a complete list, but it's pretty thorough. And there are government agencies that are available, as well as financial programs. And looking at when parents of special needs children become aged, who's going to take over the responsibility for those now adults that might be 50 years old, what's going to happen to them when mom and dad are either no longer able to take care of them or what? So there's a lot of issues that we who do not have special needs children are not aware of. So, that's a lot of the book.
Yeah, those are pretty thorough lists too. And I like that it's not just, okay, here's the places you can go or the people you can contact, but there's advice about how to do that, what to look for, you know, how to get the information and whatnot. So it's not like, okay, here's everything you need to know. It's here's how to get started, and here's how to run with it on your own from there. And I think that's especially valuable compared to a lot of the others that are out there that I looked at as well. And in that regard, yeah, you excellent accomplishment, Karen. I think it's a very valuable book that way.
And I have to give Carol credit for that, because she would say, you know, here's some places that are very valuable, and here are the reasons why. So she was a good resource for me in investigating. So, I think it's very important.
Yeah. So, Beam, you want to play one more commercial, and then we'll come back and talk to Carol about her health?
We do have a telephone call.
A caller. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead and throw Lady Bird, and then we'll take the call.
All right.
I'm Sean, and I'm 10. Ladybird is my beagle. Right from the start, I knew she had special powers, and that we could share secrets. I was the coolest kid at school before the accident hurt my ability to see. Then, I became a kid with special needs. I was not always close friends with the kids I started calling feel, hear, touch, and taste. I mean, we would play sometimes, but then I needed help learning a new way of life that takes friendship and trust. Ladybird helps a lot, especially since she has special needs too. Ladybird understands how each of us has our own challenges to rise above. I would really like to tell you about Ladybird and what she does for my friends and me. Our story is in the book, Ladybird, Sean's Sixth Sense, by Gracie Bradford. Gracie's a really cool grandma who writes these I Am stories about kids finding new ways to be their best. You should check out Gracie Bradford's book. A great one to start with is the one with me and the world's coolest dog, Ladybird, Sean's Sixth Sense.
All right. That book is available at Amazon and all booksellers online. So we will go to the phone lines here. Hello, caller. You are on the air. Where are you calling from? And what's your name?
Hi there. This is Verwain.
Hi, Verwain. Welcome
to
the show. Peninsula of Michigan. Thank you. You were talking about having the right doctor. It's just like having, the right parent has to adopt these type of children. Because not everybody, they may love kids, but when things begin to challenge them, people can lose their cool. But it's the same thing with their providers. You can have an excellent doctor, but if they cannot relate to those kind of kids, same thing with the nurses and the technicians who have to draw blood, and the kids know that that's going to hurt. If you don't have the right technicians and the right team taking care of these kids, it can be a real problem. But fortunately, a lot of hospitals are now realizing that, Sue here may be a great nurse, but she can't relate to these kids.
Yeah.
I've seen that over and over in the ER. I could take a little kid come in, it would be crying for days. I'd put him to sleep 2-3 minutes simply because, they would feel safe with me and just relax and go to sleep. But you've got to have the right kind of, all the way down the line, you have to have the right parents. You got to start there. But you got to have the right doctors, nurses, techs, everybody right down the line. So,
yeah, and I think that would go into the way Carol had talked about going through several different pediatricians, until you find the right one. They may be fine pediatricians, but if they don't have that particular skill, that ability, something that comes from the heart, or the touch. There you go.
Can I respond to
the? Yeah.
I wrote my master's thesis on touch, and the skin is our largest organ, and certainly there's touch that's not nice and it's cruel and harsh, but most of it needs to be loving touch. And Justin was never really touched. He never, his mother, his grandmother, no one ever came to visit him. So he lost a very, very important part when he was just a little tiny infant. And Carol saying, you must hold him when you feed him, that was very powerful. And then the other part of it, and as a retired nurse, and I worked in pediatrics for several years, no, not every nurse is kind and gentle and sweet and the same for doctors and technicians. And just trying to step aside and think, what if this was my child? How would I want them to be treated? Unfortunately, some people don't do that. They want to get the blood drawn. They want to do the procedure, and they rush. And that's most unfortunate. A second part, and then to quiet, is that Down syndrome children, adults, are just the cutest, sweetest, lovable people. Yes. And most of us in the general population are attracted to them. But whether the child has polio, cerebral palsy, cystic fibrosis, so forth, it scares people. They don't know how to react to them. And yet they are a special human being. And I don't fully understand the human behavior on that part, but it does exist. And I'm hoping, like Carol's book, and I love Gracie Bradford's books. They're tremendous.
They are.
We just need to stop judging people by what we physically see, but look beyond and look deep into who they really are. They are special people. We're all special people. Okay, that's my sermon for the day.
I agree. I think that, you know, when you look at the interior, when the exterior, that's just kind of the envelope, but what's inside of the envelope? You know, you're not going to judge your mail. You get the mail in the post. You're not going to judge that by what the envelope looks like. You're going to open it up and read the letter or whatever. That's what human beings are. There's something inside. When you find out who the real person is inside, you know, then that's when you know somebody. That's when you can read.
Mm-hmm. I was lucky in that my first wife had this. She was an obese but nurse. And she just absolutely had the thing with mothers and babies, and it was just absolutely incredible to watch her work with. In fact, she would get calls going, "Could you have Judy come in and do that Judy thing that she does and help get this baby delivered?" And then Lisa and I both worked the ER, and to work the ER, you either have to love it or you shouldn't be there.
You should love your job or move on.
Right. Especially when you're treating people and you're making a difference in somebody's life, you know, sometimes forever.
I have a funny story. Right after we adopted him, I was going from one doctor to the other, trying to make sure that I'd seen orthos and neuros, and one of them was ophthalmologist. And so I took him to the ophthalmologist one day, and he put him up in his ophthalmologist chair, even though he couldn't sit up. I don't know how he did it, but the doctor was very brisk, you know, and really, he was a pediatric, but I think he, too, had that, like, oh, no, what am I going to do with this kid? So, anyway, I don't know how they did it, but they did something where they did an eye test and decided he needed the glasses. So I'm thinking, oh, my God, he's not going to wear those things. And so we went back. We got the glasses. And, we went back to the car, and I had them on him, and every time I turned around, he was throwing them off. I said, no, you have to wear your glasses. I put them back on him. You throw them off. Well, this went on until we went back for the follow-up visit. And I told the doctor, I said, well, he won't wear these glasses. I can't make him wear them. And the doctor looked at Justin. Now, this autistic child, and says, Justin, you need to wear these glasses. They're going to be good for you, and you need to put them on and leave them on. So the doctor puts the glasses on, and Justin never took them off. We got in the car. The glasses were on. We rode down the road. The glasses were on. We got home. The glasses were on. I said, Alan, look at this. The glasses were on. Never took them off. And he even wore a patch on one eye. And I'm like, how did he do that? We were just dumbfounded. We thought that was the funniest thing. So you never know about people, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, do you have anything else to add there, Verwaine?
No, like I said, it the touch and the ability to touch or to reach out to patients if you can be the best at what you're doing, but if you don't have the ability to handle and touch those people emotionally and physically, you shouldn't be doing that job.
I agree.
Well, thanks for calling, Verwayne.
Yeah, thank you for calling in, Verwayne. And thanks for showing up every week. We really do appreciate it.
We love it. We sit around here and talk about it. So thank you.
Thank you.
We do have a tweet from one of our regulars, Dr. Helen Burrell. Helen writes that she's wondering why her tweets haven't been mentioned. So I scrolled down and checked, and I am not seeing any other tweets from you, Dr. Helen, that have hashtag Fresh Ink Group. So I opened another tab and even searched for at Fresh Ink Group, and I don't see any tweets from you at Fresh Ink Group either.
Hmm.
So I'm not quite sure where your tweets went, but the one where you asked, where are my tweets, is the one I am seeing. Other than that, I'm not seeing any others. So if you would, try again. Just hashtag Fresh Ink Group, and we'll spot it when it pops up here. But thanks for your support, Dr. Helen. We always look forward to hearing from you.
Yeah, I see the one tweet there from her, but I don't see any other ones. Carol, you briefly touched on this earlier. You had a cancer diagnosis. If you don't mind talking about it, could you give us a little bit of a status update on that and how you're doing there?
In 2015, actually, I know the date, November the 13th, which was Friday the 13th, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. It was a total shock, totally unexpected. And I, 2 days later, I had a major surgery to, you know, try to get rid of as much of it as they could. And since then, the last 6 years, I've been on chemo. I've probably been on every kind of chemo you can think of, trying to fight this disease, which has really taken a big toll on me and toll on Alan, because he's had to take over everything. And unfortunately, we've come to the end of the road, and there's not much else they can do. So we're calling in hospice and, you know, just taking it from there. I don't like it, but I've accepted it. So I have a bucket list of things I want to do while I can. So we're going to get on the road there and do some things and,
Well, I think that, you know, I think that God has used you quite mightily for the work that you've done with Justin and Joshua, as well as your own two biological children as well. I think there are things that we don't understand.
Yeah.
Things that are kind of out of our comprehension.
Well, maybe he's got a bunch of autistic people up there he needs some help with.
Okay, I do want to throw in here, I have found one of Dr. Helen's tweets. It was way down in this other one. I hit refresh and it popped up, but it wasn't showing up originally. And one of the tweets that she put out earlier was, she says, I'm intrigued by my RN colleague, Karen Ingalls, by her broad spectrum writing gift, fiction to nonfiction. This video introduces learning about autism. Her book about an autistic boy's loving nurturing by his special ed adoptive mother. Dr. Helen is also a nurse, or was a nurse.
Always a nurse.
Indeed. Like, once a nurse, always a nurse.
So Karen, that we were racing on here was trying to get the books down to you quick enough for your book launch event. And they got there in time?
They did get here in time.
And how did the event go?
The launch was wonderful. I filled the room with about, I don't know, 30 balloons because Justin loves balloons. And they are, to me, a wonderful symbol because Justin rose above his challenges. Carol is rising above her challenges, and she's had several in her life. Some of them are brought out in the book. And her husband, Alan, also has rose above his challenges. So you fill a balloon with air, and it rises. When you fill someone with love, they rise. And
amen.
Justin's little eyes just lit up and were sparkling, and he had a big smile, and he was pointing at all the balloons as he came in. And I think they took them all home with them.
Oh, yeah.
It was well-attended. There were about 60 people there. And,
60? That's a great event.
I thought that I was hoping if I could get 50, I'd be happy. There were some that couldn't come at the last minute, but it was very successful. I thought it was good, and Carol was sitting in the front row, and I could watch her face. And at one point, all of a sudden, I was talking about Joshua, and I went blank. I couldn't think of Down syndrome, and Carol's mouthing to me, Down syndrome. So it was great. And afterwards, we went to a local restaurant that's a quarter of a mile away and had a wonderful meal. And it was a great social time. And I think it wore Carol out, but it was well worth it. It was great.
And you raised some money for cancer research.
Yes. Every penny that we gain from sale of a book, it goes to the gynecologic cancer research here in Orlando. Mm-hmm.
So you went through your entire shipment of 51 books that day?
We did. And
wow.
I just got their shipment yesterday, I believe it was. And I've got more than half of them sold. So
wow.
I'm going to be doing some delivering tomorrow morning.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if people in the audience want to, rather than buying from a place like Amazon or Barnes & Noble, if they want to get an autographed copy, I assume that would be available, and they just need to contact you or get a hold of you through us, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. And remember, people, it's for a good cause.
Yes. Yes.
So what's the reaction been to the book so far? Are you getting feedback from people who are reading it?
Yes. She's one of our favorite little ladies. She, from our group, she saw me the next day and she said, Karen, I brought that book home. I started reading it. And the next thing I knew it was midnight and I just finished it. And she just went on and on about how much she enjoyed it and how much she learned, not just about Carol for sure, but about, you know, autism and cerebral palsy and Down syndrome and the school for autism, which we really haven't talked about yet. But, and other people have responded the same way. I'm very pleased. I'm very proud. And I'm so grateful that Carol has agreed to have me do this book, and her story is amazing.
So you mentioned the school, and we haven't talked about that very much yet. What is it about the school that's unique or groundbreaking or doing things in new and better ways than a lot of what's been available out there?
Well, I'll respond a little bit, but Carol certainly is the expert in it. But when Justin was ready to go to school, Carol had difficulty finding a school that could handle autism, but also the birth behavior problems that Justin was going through with his cerebral palsy and autism. But autism was a big issue. And again, in that era, it wasn't really well understood. There was a lot of controversy about what it is and what it isn't. And Carol was teaching at Morningstar Catholic School, and mainly her kids none of them had autism at that time. And so Carol brought Justin into the school, and then word got out that here's a teacher that will work with children with autism. So soon the school was filling up, and it was more than Carol could handle. And then there were some other issues. So two other mothers who had children in the school with autism and Carol, I call them a triad, each with their expertise, went out and literally built a school for children with autism. And it was the first charter school in the state of Florida for autism. Carol, do you want to pick up from there?
Sure. Actually, these two ladies pushed me into doing this. Their children were in my classroom at the time, and they wanted me to start a school. And I'm like, oh, no, I can't do that. Oh, no, I don't know anything about starting a school, blah, blah, blah. And they said, you know, they really pushed me into doing it. And I said, I can't leave my job, you know, and I like Morningstar. But anyway, they convinced me, and I started this school in my house. We had started with six children. And I'm like, I told them, I said, I don't know where we're going to get autistic children. I don't know where I don't know if there are enough even to support a school. Well, that proved me wrong, because we started growing exponentially. And we were a private school at the time, because there wasn't, before the charter schools, and so the tuition was very high. And, it seemed like we had to turn children down, which I could stand. So when the charter school movement came along, I'm like, well, as much as I don't want to be a part of the public school system, I feel like that's the only way that we can let any child in without charging tuition. So I did my work and started a charter school, and it was free to all. And as it grew, when I left, we had 260 autistic children. And I'm like, well, so much for my thought that where am I going to find autistic children? And they were there.
Yeah, they are.
Now, Carol, what kind of advice would you have for families that may be going through the process of either adopting or raising one of their own children that's autistic and has these special needs?
Well, you know, the interesting thing was when we started Princeton House, I had thought about putting Justin into the public school, and when I observed and saw what I was being offered, I knew that that was not going to work, was not what I wanted. And I think that once we started this private school, charter school, the public schools realized they were losing a lot of their students, and these were highly funded students. They billed out a lot of money per child, and they were losing it to Princeton House. And the good thing about that was they upped their program, and they started trying to do a better job, be competitive with Princeton House, and which I was fine, because I knew we couldn't take every child. There had to be, you know, they had to be able to go somewhere else. And so the public schools have really pulled themselves up into the doing better work with children with autism, and doing more. They're more. What's the word I'm trying to think? More competitive with us, which is fine, because that's what I wanted. I want all children to have a great education. And yes, we have our children, but you don't have to come to us anymore.
the public school can give you the same kind of educational opportunities.
Yeah, competition breeds excellence.
Yes, it does. And everybody used to say, oh, they're all going to go back to public school. And I said, well, you know, now they have a choice. And and that was fine. We never lost any children. We kept growing and growing. But, you know, it really helped. The competition really beef up the programs in the public schools.
It sounds like if a parent's having trouble getting the kind of resources or help that's needed out of a public school, maybe just hold a meeting with the principal and say, well, we're talking to other organizations thinking of moving into this area. How much is the allocation per student head again that we would be taking away from you? And that might get
right.
some attention.
Yeah.
Well, competition.
Most of our children are, in Florida, we use something called a matrix, which is based on the type of services and the amount of services a child needs. Ours are very, very highly funded because of all the needs that these kids need. So, you know, a school would be losing a lot of money to lose if they lost a lot of their students. So the nice thing about the charter school is that we could spend the money the way we feel it's necessary on the things that we think are important. And under their thumbs for what we can and cannot do.
Yeah, and you can focus on the specific needs of your group, too, as opposed to trying to meet the needs of a wider population that has a lot more variables in it as well. You know what you're looking for. You know how to get that done, and you're not distracted by all the other stuff as well.
Yeah, and your curriculum, I think, is going to differ in many instances widely. It's going to differ from the public schools curriculum.
Yeah. Now we're down to our final minutes here. Karen, we've had you on the show before. This is your second appearance, and we certainly hope it's not the last. Can you give some advice to independent authors out there who are thinking about doing any kind of book project or just writing for their own journals or blogs or whatnot, or people who want to get into publishing, or people who want to learn more about autism and dealing with special needs and the resources? Well, that's a broad question, isn't it?
I was going to say, time do I have? Well, the first part. If you believe you have a story to share, which every single human being does, write it out. And don't listen to other people, you don't have the education, or have you taken this class, or da-da-do. If you believe, go for it. Because your story is going to be important. And you may not end up on some morning shows and make millions of dollars, but you're going to make millions of, what's the word I want? You're going to grow so
connection.
Much by, yes. It's a beautiful, wonderful journey. And I can't encourage people enough.
Well, as Verwaine might say, it's another way to touch people.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a writer, you make connections with people. That's, you know, and it may not be a million people, but it's going to be the ones that's going to mean something to them.
Yeah.
And
well,
the second part to that is you learn so much about yourself.
Yeah.
When you're writing.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good advice. We appreciate having both of you on. How can our listeners find both of you now? Websites, blogs, email addresses, Twitter handles, street corners that you like to, hang out late at night.
Yeah, we're for the street corner in just a few minutes. Uh-huh.
Singing doo-wop songs.
Well, I think everyone has access to my website, and my blogs are there, and I have a Twitter and Facebook and so forth. They're all listed in the book, so when you buy the book, they'll be there for you.
There you go.
How's that for a pitch?
There you go.
And how about you, Carol? If someone wants to send you a note or ask a question or anything like that, is there a good way to get a hold of you?
Gosh, I don't know. I guess.
Now let me preface this and say that if people want to get a hold of you and send a note to Fresh Ink Group, we can always pass something along. So, you know, you don't need to be giving out personal information if you don't want to. But
right, I'm kind of thinking, well, I'm sure they could get a lot of information from Karen, from her, you know, what she's publicly put out. And, you know, I don't mind at all sharing my, I don't know how to answer that question.
Okay.
I'm hoeing and humming. I don't know.
Well, but, you know, the author is Karen Ingalls, and anybody could track her down. So as long as they can get a hold of Karen Ingalls, she can always pass along a note to you or ask a question or something like that.
Well,
so.
I love to talk to people about autism. I'm always happy to talk to parents who have questions. Getting hold of me, you can do it through, like you said, Fresh Ink or through Karen. And, you know, I do a lot of consulting free of charge. I don't charge anything. I just trying to help parents. So
don't you have a Facebook?
Help, let me know.
Carol, do you have a Facebook page? Do you have a Facebook page?
Yes, I do. I'm on Facebook.
There you go.
Okay.
Yes, it's, Carol Tucker, and ring me up on Facebook.
Okay, great.
All right.
All right. Well, we appreciated having you both on the show, and listeners, we're down to a minute or two here. We want to remind you, we got a lot more books coming together this month, including Beam.
Patricia Guthrie's Legacy of Danger, that's in the review process. The cover art is being worked on, and that should be out pretty soon.
And then we have two more books from Patricia Guthrie coming out after that, Water Lilies Over My Grave and a collection of short stories. And another one that's coming soon?
One by author Jay Ajluni. We've got a few of his books on the Fresh Ink Group website. He's got a new one called Whoopi Loves Her Bacon Crispy. And it's 65 excerpts from famous women, and it's got some really cool original caricature art in it. So that alone is worth the price of admission, as Mark Herndon said last week.
Yeah, and we're getting very close on There Must Be Something in the Water by Abigail Hugeni. That's the one about the small town in the South where a whole lot of the local black residents really accomplished some great things, and it's a book about their what all that they've done.
The cover is done for the republishing of The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms. He's a former guest on the show. So that's done, and it's the interior is, Stephen, that's
yeah, we're working on it. Yeah. He had it done by Page Publishing, and then when they sent us the files, they're not something we can use. So we're going to wind up having to redo it. But we're about out of time. Next week, our guest is going to be Susan Hughes, who runs My Independent Editor. And after that?
After that, we have author and screenwriter Gabriel Constans. And Gabriel's got some movies that have been made, and we will be talking to him about those. So tune in for that one.
Okay. Thanks again, Karen Ingalls and Carol Tucker. And thanks, audience. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, ladies.
My pleasure.
All right.
Thank you.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.